It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors in February now. Captain Mike Ward, how are you?
Doing great, Sean. It's unbelievable that we just have one weekend. This is the last weekend.
Yes.
And this is it. It's unbelievable.
And then I started looking at
deer season.
So I started thinking, you know, can I, like, play hooky on Friday? I started looking like maybe Thursday, Friday, because it ends on Friday.
Right.
So, and I was thinking about that, and I might, but, you know, the extended forecast isn't particularly great. I mean, I know it's a rut, doesn't matter, but it's like 70s and stuff next week.
Yeah, I know it.
So I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, but I know. It is what it is.
I'll still make a few. Yeah, I'm going to hunt hard this weekend, then make a few hunts next week and close it out and start thinking. Well, I'd start thinking about turkeys.
You know, talking about turkeys now.
I've been thinking about turkey. I didn't start thinking about them. I always think about my best friend, the guy you know well. He says, do you ever stop thinking turkeys? Because it'll be like dove hunt, and I'm talking about turkeys. He said, you're talking about turkeys. It's dove season.
Yeah.
I said, I'm thinking turkeys.
Well, what's the name of your club, your camp?
I probably can't. I'm not going to say it. Okay. I don't want.
But it does mean turkey.
Yes, it does. It does. It is. It's all focused on turkey for sure.
Yeah. You know, but I've got, you know, feeders out and stuff, and I'm getting a lot of pictures of turkeys strutting. Every time a hen comes around, they boat up. You know, all of them. There'd be three or four or five of them.
Yep.
They bowed up. They strutting. So
I have not heard, you know, usually I'll hear a gobble in January. But then again, I've said I hadn't hunted I have not hunted a bunch this year.
Yeah.
So I haven't been there all the time. But usually I'll hear a gobble towards the end of January. Haven't. I might hear one this weekend or this coming week. But it's not far off for turkey season. I want to talk about that too. In the next month or so, do a couple things here, turkey related. I'm trying to figure out which interviews I can get. So a real interesting podcast is out there. It's got Dr. Marcus Lashley and Goolsby out of Auburn, and it's a turkey hunt podcast. And they have done a series of these interviews. So they're both, biologists. Yeah. And not both turkey, like Goolsby's a deer guy, and Lashley's a disturbance guy, like he's big in fire and all this stuff. But they're both avid turkey hunters. They're turkey nuts. And they know, even though they're not a specific turkey biologist like Dr. Chamberlain, they know their stuff.
Sure.
Right? They're big hunters, big habitat management people. And they've interviewed Chamberlain and others here about what's going on with the turkeys. And it's interesting because this question, right, the reason that we've adjusted the season dates for turkey season in Alabama is this idea that the hens weren't getting bred. Right?
Right.
And then other people say that's the issue, and then other people say the
issue is they weren't getting bred before turkey season opened.
Yeah, they weren't getting bred before and I think we'll revisit this when we do the shows, but for folks, the theory was, Dr. Chamberlain's theory, that he did the experiments on and the research, is that, and it was an eye-opener for me, that you shoot the boss gobbler, and you're like, okay, well, let's just say
it opens up March the 15th, it used to, and then explain.
Yeah, so then you shoot the strutter.
Yeah.
You shoot the dominant gobbler. I had, and I think many other people had always thought that, okay, well, that afternoon when those turkeys reassemble or whatever, one of those other gobblers will breed the hens.
Yeah.
Right? And it happens that way, but he showed in his research the days it takes, 48 hours to maybe 3 or 4 days. It just depends on those turkeys. The gobblers will then go back through a pecking order fight.
Yeah.
Testosterone comes up in them because now they're not sub-dominant. They're trying to be the dominant gobbler. In that period of time, the hens don't want to breed with them until one comes out as the new strutter, the new boss.
Yeah.
And so he said, think about that. Every time you kill that one, you're putting these 48-hour to 3-day windows of no breeding.
Right.
So these hens are not getting bred in that period of time. So it was because they were saying how our poult to hen count ratio is, you know, anything below 2.1 is a declining population. They said, but some hens had a bunch of poults, but he said they found a bunch of hens that didn't even have a failed nest. They never laid an egg because they didn't get bred. Now, here's the problem with this, and this is why we're going to have many shows on this. that could be true on your property and might not be true on my property or, right. or across the street or across. So these guys I'm trying to get on. So they started talking about that because the kind of the three areas of what's happening with our turkeys is this idea of season date changes to give more chances for the dominant to breed the hens. The other one is trapping and predator load.
Yeah.
And the other one's habitat management. And there's these three things that all are, I think, are part of what has happened to the turkey. And there's actually interesting, I hope we get these people on. They're tracking when turkeys were restocked into states and watching where they are in a population rise or decline. And they're finding a commonality that like 20 years after, because they had states like Alabama and Mississippi, we restocked before South Carolina.
Yeah.
When we started trending down in our turkey population, South Carolina was still trending up. But at about the 20-year mark for them, they've started trending down too. Huh. They're looking at different states saying something with the restocking, maybe the population, you know, fills a niche to a certain point that it then hits. You know, nature has things, you know, we try to keep populations of deer down because if you let them get enough, you're going to have EHD and blue tongue and God's going to wipe them out.
That's right.
And take them back, put them back in check.
That's right.
So they wonder if there's a thing that they don't know about. They're looking at these commonalities of time for the populations to decline, that there's something in this 20-year window. So it's just one of the theories they rolled out that I thought I'd never heard that before.
See, it's happening in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri. Now, it may be happening in all the states up there, but...
But they said you can look at these windows,
They've had to cut the limits down.
Arkansas is in big trouble.
Yeah, so is Kansas.
Yeah.
They say Kansas used to be... I mean, I talked to several, quite a few farmers up there about turkey stuff. They said you go to a field, there'd be 300 or 400
mm-hmm. I used to go out there bird hunting.
Yeah. 200 or 300 flock over there, you know, and the farmers hated them because...
Yeah, they were in the feedlots.
They were just tearing up the crops out there. So... something's happened.
So what I'm getting at is why this is going to be a few shows we're going to do on this, and I hopefully get the right people on. There's a lot to this. There's that theory and idea that's kind of new, and they don't really know what is part. It is what we're going with, the states just like Alabama that have adjusted our turkey season dates to make sure that more hens get bred.
Right.
There's the camp that says it's because of predator load that they can't pull off a nest. And then there's people say habitat management. In reality, it is a combination of all these things. But certain people say, well, I'm just about trapping, or I'm just about, you know, versus, I mean, the trapping thing. And, you know, I'm a trapper.
Yep.
So I trap. I run traps for nest predators, you know, the DP traps, you know,
right.
for coons and possums. And but they'll say, like, if you're spending all your time trapping, and this is the tough thing too, whether you own land or lease land, whether you can do things.
Right.
Let's say you own the land, you have control over it, however, your time's better spent burning, strip disking, getting sunlight to the floor, things that help the poults later on.
Yeah.
Then you can trap. But they're at odds with
managing
some people saying
land first and then then do your trapping.
Right.
If you had to do one or the other.
They said
manage
land first. You can increase productivity more. But so there's all these different things. Move the date. Is there something we don't know about this 20-year cycle? There's just a bunch out there. So I'm hopefully over the next few weeks going to get these folks on as we lead, you know, February into March towards turkey season. We'll get these interviews on the show. But it's really interesting stuff. Always new research out there. And just when I think I know something, I go, oh, maybe I didn't. So also, as we do program notes too, this wasn't on the outdoor show, but it was on my Midday Mobile show. Keith Dees, who caught that record alligator gar in the Delta there on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to go and look at our podcast page, you can always just go to fmtalk1065.com, click podcast, or if you have the FM Talk 1065 app, you can search podcast through there or anywhere you get your podcast. Just look for FM Talk 1065 and then search for alligator gar or Keith Dees, and you'll get that interview about that great day and that record alligator gar. That's on there. I just wanted to point that out because it wasn't on this show, but it's out there and it's more of the stuff that we talk about. Also, if you want to call, speaking of deer hunting, if you want to call to down to District 5, I don't have a contact person. I know this secondhand because I was asked that this weekend we save heads from does we're going to shoot and all that, just save the heads or bucks or whatever. But
right.
Sure, because they're doing collection for CWD.
Yeah.
So, and I know that, you know, Director Chuck Sykes has talked about that before, and there's drop-off locations, but if you know, I want to do my part. So I was asked through a third party to save some heads this weekend. Tells me they're collecting. So
what? Take them and just put them in the freezer and then take them?
Yeah, or call down to District 5. See what they want you to do with it. Call the offices down there.
I would think they'd want you to cut the head off, put them in the freezer, and collect three or four or five or six.
Yeah, they said they're going to come pick up a couple places, but because I don't know exactly where they want to do that. I want folks that if you got some, you know, maybe you kill some this weekend, save those heads. And then Monday, give them a call and see what you can do about getting the heads to them. All right. So that's on my to-do list. And also, before we go any further and coming back, we're Jay Graddick's going to join us and talk a lot of deer hunting with him here as we end out season. But I want to read this email here. So actually printed out the email. Should have got my glasses, but all right. So this is a email from somebody named Keith. He might want me to give his last name. I don't know. So I can probably. I'm just adjusting. Mike's handing me his glasses. he said, I just want to take a moment to express my love and appreciation for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors for you and Mike Ward. Okay. And by the way, we love the letters we get from you and the emails and all that about appreciating the show.
Yeah.
But I don't read all those. This gets even cooler. Love the information and the stories that you and Mike and your guests share. It's an award. It's award-winning, to say the least. One can certainly tell that y'all are outdoorsmen through and through, so you know exactly what's on folks' mind. Okay, so that's really cool. That's that cool, and thank you. Thank you. I love letters like that.
Absolutely.
So as I talk about how, with the radio station overall, how much content we put up that is
a lot
of content, 55 hours a week. And I get some mapping of where people are downloading, not like your house or anything, but like Mobile County or I'm not tracking you, but and it's cool to see people across the country that download and stream as well. But I've never had one like this. So his next paragraph: I work offshore on a deep water oil gas facility, and we can't wait for the show to get posted so we can check it out. Recently, there were 12 of us listening on a Friday afternoon in the control room. So this is out on the platform. We argued about cameras for 3 days following the show. Remember, you and I were talking cameras.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say some real nice things about the show and us. And he says, it's obvious you work really hard to make FM Talk 106.5 what it is. Keith, thank you. I mean, there's a whole bunch more to this. I'll let Mike read it. But I thought it was really cool as you think about, you know, we talk about the fact when this show's over, like later today, it posts up as a podcast and gets shared all over. You can go to the FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors podcast Facebook page and click the podcast there or go any of the places I just told you. But knowing that folks offshore...
I need to get his phone number.
Well, I sent an email to him. I said, when you see tuna, Mike and I will come see you directly.
That's right.
All right, so when y'all spot those tuna. All right, we're coming right back. Jay Graddick is going to join us next. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And yeah, once again, big thank you to Keith who sent the email. And if they're doing it again this weekend, how y'all are?
Yeah,
as Justin Wilson used to say. I just like the fact that, you know, we get tons of podcast downloads of this show, but to know that folks are listening on offshore drilling platforms, I think it's really cool.
Not just one of them, but there's 12
of them. Yeah, and by the way, so
then they have an argument about the show for 3 days.
Right, because they're talking about game cameras. We talked about last week, and Mike, you said we should do it again, and we will.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, you can go back. The nice thing is, go back, listen to last week's show if you wonder what we're talking about. Just kind of went through, because Mike was asking about getting some more cameras, and I did my opinion on the breakdown of a linked system like Cuddy Link that I run those from Cuddy Back. I have a full, you know, 16 of those. And then the reasons why that might not be right for one property but might be right for another property. And then the fact that I use SpyPoint. I also have SpyPoint. I use them differently and to fill in. And I say SpyPoint. There's a bunch of other – in other words, linked cameras versus one-off cameras.
Right.
You know, if you want to have it depends on how far your stuff is spaced and all that kind of stuff. So you can go back
and
listen
to that. It's really interesting because if anybody knows, you do. You've got more cameras out on property than anybody else I know. And it's amazing. I mean, somebody steps a foot on your property, you pretty much know it.
Well, yes, now they know. But hey, the places they think there's not a camera,
there's a camera.
And maybe there's not just one camera. All right. let's bring our buddy Jay Graddick on from Skinner's Wild Game Processing. Hey, Jay.
Hey, how y'all doing, guys? I know one thing, them cameras are working your tail off.
Yet.
Well, that is, see, now that's what we had the discussion about last week. It depends. Now, if you have like Sean's got, where he's got the cuddy linked, where you put, you know, all these cameras out and they link back to one camera and then it sends a signal back to your phone, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I know our friends out in Kansas there a couple of years ago, they sent me six cameras and they were sending them the pictures back to their phones, but they weren't linked to like that cuddy link system. And just about every other day, hey, camera number two, the batteries are low.
Yeah.
Change batteries, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of work involved with those. If you don't get the right system, you can set yourself up.
But we
activity and a lot of work.
Okay, so we're kind of revisiting last week's show, but we'll do it.
We're arguing again.
Yeah. So here's the. Cuddy Link is not the only one because SpyPoint does it. I'm sure a bunch of others do it. So where I've gone from when I started running this big suite of cameras, and I'm actually expanding, the life I spent of what you said, Jay, of batteries are bad in this camera, that camera, it's expensive, number one, and it's like you don't want to go in those spots. So what I did is switched all my cameras that have the right location are solar. And, you know, when you look at the solar panels that go with cameras, people say, oh, man, I don't want to spend 40 extra bucks. I just bought the camera. Let me tell you, double A's,
yes.
Go price those babies.
That's right.
D's, go price that baby.
That's right.
The solar is a great thing. So I also explained, though, there's probably four cameras that are on batteries because they're in places you can't get enough sun.
Right.
You know, they're down the bottom or something like that. But you can get these things if you... If you buy a quality camera and have a good connection, cell connection there, and a solar panel, what is the thing? You set it and forget it. Didn't they used to say that about the Ronco whatever thing? Yeah, you set it and forget it, Jay. You don't have to ever go touch it again.
Man, that'd be great. I was actually trying to figure out how to talk to one of the camera manufacturers that's a friend of my buddies from Kansas. I was going to set a dang car battery with a solar panel on it like electric fence if I could figure it out.
Yeah, you
can. I could buy a cheap car battery for $75, put a solar panel on it, and it'll save me changing the batteries twice.
Oh, absolutely. You can do those, and a lot of people set those up. And I was tinkering around with that stuff with the smaller, not the car batteries, but the smaller 12 volts.
Yeah, like a lawnmower battery.
Yeah, those batteries before.
Yeah.
But these are so slick. Now, my familiarity is just with SpyPoint and with Cuddy Link on solar. I can't speak for all the others, but the battery is built into the solar panel, and so it's charging all the time. Then you run a line from that to
running,
the
That's what people got to understand. It's not a battery that's in the camera. It's on the solar panel. So
right.
It's charging the battery on the solar panel.
That's
feeding it with a cord that you stick a cord mm-hmm. into the camera.
Yep.
Okay.
So, and that's pretty, we're going to do more shows on that coming up. So I know we're talking about cameras, but we're talking about cameras because we're talking about deer too. That's why Jay's on with us. It's been, I don't know, you know, I'm seeing a secondary rut. I've told you, at my place, we get a rut kind of like the Black Belt, middle of January. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it really starts picking up right after Christmas where we are. And then it kind of troughs off. And then we get like a February rut, too.
Seeing
that kind of kick in. Jay, what are you seeing on deer coming in? Is talking about rutting, or what are you seeing?
Yeah, it's wide open right now. The deer are, you know, it's not that all-out chasing type of phase of the rut right now that we're seeing up there, but it's the bucks are definitely with the does. They're definitely following does around, and they're getting closer to that lockdown type stage right now where they're not covering a lot of country. They're kind of getting off to themselves. And you know, I had Mike, I don't think we talked, I might have sent you a picture of a deer I got, I think it was Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Did I send you that picture?
No, I didn't send it.
I'll need to send it to you. Man, I had a great hunt Sunday morning, and this is why I say it's kind of in this lockdown stage. I was slipping along, you know, stalk hunting, and I caught a piece of a deer and was watching it with my binoculars, and it took a little while. Finally, I identified it as a small buck, a little small rack buck, and then I'm like, well, what's he doing down there? And he wasn't really doing anything. He was just kind of standing around, and a little while later, I picked up another one. another small rack buck. So then I'm like, okay, all right.
Something
going on down there. Right. So I look around, and it took me probably 20 minutes minimum, and I find another deer. And then when he stepped out, it was a big buck. And so I'm like, okay. But he was facing away from me, going up a hill a little bit, just meandering around, no big, you know, no mission, not going anywhere. Well, anyway, eventually I shot at him. I missed him. I didn't know if I hit him or missed him. He just disappeared when I shot at 250-something yards. So I just held my ground. I didn't see no deer run off. I just stayed still. I've seen times where you miss a big deer or miss a deer, and they don't know what happened. And so in a few minutes, here comes one of them little rack bucks, goes under the hill there, walking along. And then out in front of it was the first time I saw the doe. And there's a lot of greenbrier on the hillside and all this kind of stuff. So there's a doe. And the doe looks back in the area where I had shot at the big deer. And so I'm like, he's either dead or he's still there. So they work their way on out of, you know, kind of out of the picture there, another 50, 75 yards down the hillside. And probably about another 5-10 minutes, big boy stepped out again. I missed him.
You missed him?
Yeah, I missed him. The second time I was able to, there was a dang sapling right behind, right in the boiler room that he had between me and him. He was broadsided. And so I said, look, I got to take this shot. So I shot right behind it, and I spined him. And I saw him go down, and he, you know, he was, I seen him flip his head trying to get up. And I was like, all right, he's down. Well, where I was at, it took about 15, 20 minutes just to get over to that other hill, all the greenbriers and stuff. I had to cross the bottom and go back up another hill. And when I got over, I couldn't hardly find that joker. And I'm looking. And really, I'm glad I found him because he tried to get up when I got close to him. That's the only way I found him.
Huh.
Anyway, I ended up finishing him off. And from beginning to end, when I first saw the first buck, it was just before around 8 o'clock. And when I put my hands on the deer, it was about 9:30. So it took a good hour to get him killed, and then a few more minutes to go find him.
And I do have a picture. You did send me a picture of that deer.
Heck of a buck, yeah.
That is an awesome buck for Alabama.
Thank you.
He is awesome. Did you score him?
And I mean, no, I haven't scored him. But I mean, it's just the hunt. You know, you get in a treehouse, the deer walks out. Yep, that's the one I want to shoot, bank.
Yeah.
Or you climb a tree, you know, and deer walks by. Yep, that's in the bank. But the way this hunt unfolded and the amount of time it took and the patience and just understanding, you know, those bucks, the original bucks I saw, there's a reason why they were down there. And they weren't feeding. They were just kind of just paying attention to what was going on. I was like, I've seen this before.
Yep.
This could be satellite situation. And just a matter of time before eventually it shows.
Having trouble hearing you.
Just exciting.
There you go. Yeah, you just had trouble hearing you for a second there. You said, I think this is something to hit on. First of all, great buck. It's a fine 10-point. Yeah.
I'd say, what, a 140-something probably?
Yeah, I think he's in the 140s if I had to guess.
I mean, that's a hell of an Alabama buck.
Yes, a Clark County fine buck.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you said something here, and if we don't finish this, we'll go to break and come back. You've talked about it before. You said satellite. What do you mean by satellite bucks? I thought you were talking elk hunting for a second.
I'm sorry. Yeah, these satellite bucks, I call them satellites, like satellite bulls, or
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the non-dominant deer, not the deer that's actually tending the doe. When you got those younger bucks around like that, there's usually an older, more dominant a buck involved that's right there with the doe, and they're kind of hanging around and just hoping that they get a chance, I guess.
Yeah. And that's what they do.
So, I mean,
they're just hoping that something happens. Jay comes along and shoots that big one, so they might have a chance at the doe.
Oh, they got it going on now, probably.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, but I think that's an important thing to talk. We'll come back from the break and talk about it, because often when you see smaller bucks, you might say, well, there's not that. Big buck's not in this area.
No.
In fact, it seems like maybe quite the contrary. Coming right back, more with Jay Graddick right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward. And still talking deer here for at least in the... And we'll probably have the recap, next week.
Right.
And then it'll be... Turkeys? I'm going to talk turkey. And quail.
We're talking bass fishing, turkey hunting.
Oh, is there other stuff we do?
Yeah, quail.
Is there other stuff we do?
We do a lot of stuff.
Talking deer right now, though, with our buddy Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Process. And we're looking at the picture during the break again. Real heck of a buck.
That's
dandy.
Awesome buck. You don't see this quality of a buck in open land in Alabama too much. I mean, this deer is a one. I look at it, 140-something, and Jay thinks he's a 140-something. Beautiful.
I look at him like buck. This. He's bigger than anything I've ever shot.
Yeah.
So yep. I know he's big.
Right? Yep. Beautiful deer.
Well, thank you, guys.
It's but you say we're talking about that before we went to the break, that satellite buck thing. It's because it's I've seen it to be true, but also you could get sometimes if you see a lot of little bucks, you can get it in your brain that that means there's not a big buck there, right? Because right. Why would they be there? But you're saying that was to the contrary in this hunt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right now, Sean, I would say if you see a small buck, now if he's traveling, if he's coming through there, and just looks like he's on a mission to go somewhere, not the case. That's just a small buck doing his thing, trying to find some action somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see these small bucks come in around a feeder or especially out in the woods and they're not really doing anything, they're just kind of hanging out. And especially if you got one, let's say you see him and he's not looking at you and he's not feeding or anything, but he's staring at something.
Yeah.
Off to the side or whatever. Man, you really need to start paying attention because right now they're you can have I've seen in Kansas, heck, I've seen as many as 7 bucks on one doe. And
yeah.
You don't see that here, but I have seen 2 or 3 small like spikes, 4 points, these little 1.5-year-old bucks, every now and then these 2.5-year-old bucks. And then there'll be a big deer. And then what happens is I've done this myself. I shot like that first rack buck I seen. Years ago, I'd have probably shot it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd have seen the big one going up the hill with the doe.
Yeah, right,
I'd
right.
Going, dang, I wish I'd have shot that. I wish I'd have looked around some more before I pulled the trigger.
That's right. But that's what happens when you start trophy hunting more and letting the small ones go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You do have more opportunities at bigger bucks. And I never will explain a hunting trip that I had one time in Marengo County. There was a buck with a doe out in a soybean field, and had some had woods all around it. And there was probably at least 6 or 8, or maybe even more bucks. I can't remember. I had to go pull my video out and look at it because I videoed it. Bucks came from every direction to that doe. I mean, came from the north, the south, the east, the west. It's like something, how do they know? I mean, you think, well, the wind's blowing from the north to the south, so they're going to be coming from the south up there. But they came from every direction. So I don't know whether I couldn't hear because I was about 250 yards away, but maybe that doe was making a bleat sound or something that I couldn't hear, or maybe the buck was just grunting loud or something. I couldn't hear that either, maybe. But
right.
I've never seen it where bucks came from every direction to that doe.
It's awesome to get to see those things. You go hunting so many times, and you don't see much of an interaction of deer vocalization and those kinds of things. And then whenever you do see it, I mean, I've had a couple of hunts myself where you hear a loud bleat, like a doe bleat, real,
yeah.
And then next thing you know, you hear those long grunts, not them little short ones, but those, they go long. And next thing you know, here they come. They're running down through there. If you start hearing that racket, you better get your gun ready because it ain't going to last but a couple seconds.
Yeah.
And it's going to come on by you quick. I mean, you might get an opportunity at a great big buck, but they not standing around looking at each other. They moving.
That's right.
Yeah.
Especially that's up north. North. You know, and you was telling me the other day that you got to hear a buck snort wheeze.
That's right.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know. Maybe I've heard it and didn't know what it was years ago or something in Alabama. You know, of course, if it was passed probably 10, 15 years ago and one snort wheeze, I wouldn't have known what that was, I don't believe. You know, I didn't know that's the sound that they made.
Right.
But if I heard it now, I would. I heard it in Kansas several times this year. But you heard it here in Alabama. I think you – didn't you hear it twice?
Yeah, I heard it this year two different times.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I've heard it in the past. But, yeah, I actually called a buck across a ridge over into a draw that I was in. I was playing with him. It was an 8-point, just a wasn't very big rack and not a very old deer. And I actually called him over to me, and he about couldn't get him run off. He came over, hung out about 20 yards, and then he snort wheezed.
Yeah.
But when you do that, here's what happens is I snort wheezed at him. He looked my way. He was on the other side of a treetop. He walked out from behind that treetop, and he was bristled up a little bit. He starts making scrapes. I mean, leaves and dirt flying everywhere and rubbing his horns in a tree. And then he kind of looked around, and when I got his attention again, I did it again. And then he walked right on over that ridge and come right to me. And then about, 10 days later, I saw the top of a big buck in his rack. And he went over a hill fixing to go on some planted pines. I said, well, I might as well call to him. I was on my feet again on the ground. And I grunted twice. I usually like to grunt first and get their attention. And then I snort wheezed. And it wasn't 30 seconds. That jerker was coming right at me. And I shot him, but I had to get a dog to find him. And I recommend get a dog, guys. If you lose one, bring somebody in with a good dog. They caught the deer. He was 580 yards. I shot it about 7:30 in the morning, and it was around lunch. And the dog caught the deer, bait him, and we went over and finished him off. It was a nice buck too.
I don't know if you know, and I'm sure it's out there. I don't have time to Google it while we're doing the show, but there's probably some kind of place online where people who have those dogs can list their dogs, you know, like somewhere. Yeah, if somebody, having a dog, I mean, somebody might say, I don't know anybody who has a tracking dog. So is there a place online, and maybe somebody who's listening to us knows, is there a, you know, website or something you can go say, okay, I'm in this part of the state. There's Sean Sullivan, his dog. I'll call him.
Yeah, there's an organization out there. I think it's Nose to the Ground.
Okay.
You can Google Nose to the Ground, I think, is a tracking dog organization in Alabama. And then also, if you're up around Thomasville area, just call us at Skinner's. We got a couple of phone numbers of a couple of guys that they really love to work their dogs and find deer, and they're pretty good at it.
You know, I stopped at Thomasville the other night, Saturday night, coming home. And there was a guy pulled up in his truck and had a big dump trailer. You may know who he is. He had a dump trailer with his buggy in the dump trailer with his dog in the back of his buggy.
Yeah.
And he was headed to go find somebody's deer.
Yeah, he was the guy. He's the one that found my deer.
Oh, he is? Okay, how about that? Yeah, coincidental.
Guy. Yeah, he's from Vineland.
That's exactly right. He told me he was from Vineland. That is him.
That's right.
And that's strange. Right. That's coincidental.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was a real nice guy, and he says that most of the time he finds them. He says rare occasion that he doesn't find them.
Right. They found one, Mike. They found one. The lady had shot it in the foot.
And they found it?
Foot. Above the ankle right there, you know, just above, I guess you call it the lower leg. And they ended up running that thing down, and I forget, it seemed like 2 miles, 2.5 miles. They finally baited it and got it.
Man.
Now, they don't catch every, you know, they don't catch every deer.
No.
But you got a better chance of that than you do just going out there and walking around. I'd have never found that buck that I shot. It left some blood. It crossed the creek. It was a little bit of blood here and there, but then that deer did something usually a wounded deer don't do. It went up the hillside and laid down in a briar thicket. Typically, they'll go down or straight. And so that deer was probably 150 yards from the creek. It had been going parallel to the creek, and I would have never gone up there and looked on them hillsides.
Yeah.
But the nose knows, and the dog, yeah, it's you'd be a great person to ask about this. I was going to talk about the few experiences I've had, but at the same time, finding deer, we talk about deer that aren't found. There's some amazing things I've seen of deer survive injuries and be back at it the next year. I mean, when y'all are cleaning deer, do you find deer that have been shot before, or, you know, whether archery or, yeah, or I mean, it's amazing what they get, the licking, yeah, they can take and keep going.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, they come in. Deer are incredible animals, and like you said, they can take a lot. We find them with broken legs that have fused back together. The joints don't work.
Having a little trouble hearing you too. If you can move your phone a little bit there. There we go. You there?
Yes, sir.
All right, there we go. Yeah, it was getting muffled there. So you said you find deer with broken legs that have healed and.
Yeah, they get shot all kind of ways, either shot or crippled, some form or another. But they come, they're resilient animals. They can handle a lot. You'd be surprised how they can survive.
Yeah, because I think sometimes we'll tell ourselves, well, that deer's dead. We didn't find it, but that deer's dead. And in some cases, you're probably right. But in some other cases, you might not be right. Because I just know over time, just me, not running an operation like Skinner's, that I've killed deer that had a broadhead in them.
Yeah.
But where somebody had shot them and didn't kill them.
The cameras have really told a big story.
Yes.
Where I know that deer's dead.
And then he's back.
About 2 days later, he shows up on your camera somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, Mike, it's kind of funny. You remember the story I told you about that buck, that drop time buck I shot in Kansas? I shot it with my bow through the neck. And about 4 days later, he's back on the camera. And I hunted him four more times and finally got him shot.
Yep.
But you would have never thought a broadhead. You would think, well, he's going to bleed to death somehow, but
hit a vein coming through a neck somewhere.
All the time, we find broken arrows in them all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's amazing that, you think that deer for sure is dead, and it may not be. All right, we're coming right back. More of our conversation with Jay Graddick, Skinner's Wild Game Processing. And we'll talk a little bit maybe with him, too, about the collection on the CWD side. Like I said earlier, that if the word's out that I think they're looking for some heads from Mobile County, because they're asking me and my crew to save some, so maybe we want to call down to District 5 Fisheries on Monday, Wildlife and Fisheries on Monday, to find out if they're doing any more collection. Not that the CWD is present here, but they're doing the constant sampling. All right, be right back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And, like we started the show off with that discussion about the podcast of this show. Of course, it posts later on this morning, and then you can get it through our website, through the app, through anywhere that you download podcasts there. And then, of course, it reruns through the weekend as well. So,
and we talked about the boys that are out on the offshore platform that would listen to it. But there's people all over the country that listen to this hunting,
so we appreciate
and hunting and fishing show that are all over.
We appreciate y'all. It shows, when, like I said, I don't have the ability, nor do I want to track you to your house, but it'll show me on a thing like this state, that, or this town, and this place. And there's folks all over. So we appreciate it. Maybe even people, distant lands that want to hear about what we're doing here in Alabama. That's fine. Welcome aboard. We're talking to our buddy Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing here at the tail end of the season. So you feel, you also said something else when you earlier mentioned satellite bucks. Before that, you said maybe they're going into lockdown. You've talked about this with us before. How long is that period? If that buck is not, they're not seeing the bucks walking around like they were before, how long you got to wait?
I'm told it's a 3-day deal from beginning to end. If the buck is with the doe when she's first getting into that stage where lockdown can start, it's about 3 days that he'll stay with one doe.
But don't we still? He didn't stop all movement. This is a discussion we always have at the camp. I said he's still going to move with that doe, right? I mean, he's not cruising around, but if that doe gets up and walks across the gas line or something, he's going to be with her.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just think from my experience, they don't move. They don't have as big a range when that's going on.
Right.
That doe's a little less social, a little more
true.
Reclusive. They kind of get off, you know, a little draw here, a hollow there. Matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I remember one morning I saw one in a draw, and I was in Thomasville. And I went back the next morning. My wife came up. I had to leave. I went back the next morning. The same buck was with the same doe, and I got him. But it happens. But they do get up. They get up and walk around a little bit. They feed a little bit and lay down and just hang. But they typically hang out in a smaller area.
So then there might be another buck or two come through and run her and chase her too, you know, and then that bigger buck's got to run them off.
Unless it gets exciting at that point. That's right. You're either in the cheap seats or you're not. So that's why I like to move during this time of year. I don't like to just hunker down in one spot. If I hadn't seen nothing in an hour or two, I'm moving somewhere else.
So, okay, that's something that might shock people. Right, and we just have a minute or two left here, but you're moving. You're moving different stands, or you're just talking about slipping, or what are you doing?
Both. If it's a bluebird day and real and slipping around conditions are not good, then I'll go from stand to stand. If it's if I got a little bit of a breeze, I got damp conditions, or I can move through the woods, you know, relatively quiet, then I like to slip around. I've done it all my life, so I just like to do that.
In the hunting world, especially in Thomasville, they call Jay the deer whisperer.
Yeah, well,
oh,
obviously.
Lord. Oh, Lord. I don't know about that.
He is a deer killer.
Hey, y'all, now this year, guys, we are not full at Skinner's Wild Game, so y'all get a deer, bring it up here, drop it off with us, get you something to eat or whatnot, and remember, these hunters that this last weekend coming up, you live in Mobile, Baldwin County. You shoot your deer up there. Let us skin it and process it for us. When we call you, just tell us that you would like to pick it up in Daphne, and we'll save you a trip from having to come up there and get it.
Yeah, that's good because for a lot of people, they're not going to go back to the camp. So,
that's right.
So they drop off in Thomasville, but can pick up in Daphne. Same.
Absolutely.
That works out great. You know, we picked one up from Jay this past weekend, but we were going back up there. But had it been the last weekend, that would have been a great option for him to bring it back to Daphne and just run over to Daphne and pick it up.
Yeah,
so that's really a great deal because most people that hunt, or a lot of people that hunt up there that get their deer done, live down here or down this way.
That's right. Probably at least half, if not a little bit more than half, of our customers actually live in Mobile and Baldwin County.
Yes. There you go. So now you know when you drop off, you get it back down closer to the house. Hey, if you live in Daphne, it's the easiest thing ever. And you said not full, so, I mean, I know you said it was a little slow weather-wise there for a while. Are you still just fewer deer coming in?
Yeah, it's been slower this year. We're off about probably around 25% right now. So, I mean, we could take between now and the season, if we could get another 200, 250 deer, it'd be great.
All right. Y'all help out and make up for it. Jay, we appreciate it. We'll check back with you after season, get a recap. All right?
Sounds great, guys. Y'all be careful. Let's have a great weekend.
Absolutely. There goes Jay Gradek, and there goes us as well for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors for this week. We'll talk to you next week.